This is After the Credits, the home of correct movie opinions since 2007.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 352 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Marina Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
Bill Harris.
And Melissa McDowell.
We're all back. The whole gang's back together post-VIF. Everyone survived. Some of us got sick after the festival. Some of us were sick during the festival. Some of us were sick before the festival. There's a lot of sickness going around. It is cold and flu season, so I guess that's goes with the territory.
How does everybody's body feel? I feel great.
Yeah.
Except for you had pink eye.
I had pink eye, yeah.
Oh, no.
I got pink eye after the festival. Okay. Weirdest thing ever. The morning I left VIF, I woke up and my eye was completely swollen shut.
Oh, fuck.
And I had to go on the ferry with my eye all destroyed.
Was your last film really shitty?
Oh, the vapors.
Zing.
Yeah.
Chloe didn't quite make the whole festival. Her last movie was Sentimental Value.
It's a good way to go out.
Yeah, it was. It was. But we had a week of rest. We didn't put out any new episode, as I'm sure Bill knows.
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
Well, we warned you. We warned you way in advance.
I know.
But we're back this week. So, feeling energized. It's like the beginning of a new season again, you know? And some of these films that we saw at VIF will slowly be released over the next 8 months or so and become all new again. Yeah. Becomes easy review pickings when they come up, because it's like, I already saw this 4 months ago or whatever.
I will say, Steve, I wanted to congratulate you guys on the opening credits for the videos for VIF, because that was a pretty cool little credit sequence.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a little stressful, because it's like, I'm new to the video editing. I've been a podcaster for my entire, my entire quote unquote career of doing this. But getting into video has been a whole different ball game. And just learning everything on the fly, teaching everything myself. So I'm hoping to incorporate that kind of shit into what the hell should I watch now? So.
Cool. Yeah, I really liked it. So I just wanted to.
Thank you. Say, thank you. I
well
appreciate
done.
That
it looked pretty cool.
I appreciate that a lot. Yeah. And the most important all is the VIF press office was really happy with everything. So I was like, that's all, in the end, it's like, we just want to show off how much we appreciate the festival and how much we enjoy the festival. So at the end of it, if everyone's happy with what I put out, I'm grateful.
Passes secured for next year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Grateful for all that kind of stuff.
And I got sick, like literally day one. Day one. Yeah. I saw Melissa for one movie, yep. And then I went home, and then I saw no other movies in the theater.
Nope.
Until like the closing weekend of the festival. We went to a couple of talks, and then we went to two movies at the Rio.
But Marina and I watched Gojira and Korn tear the roof off of the garage.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Gojira works great. I have a t-shirt to prove it.
Yeah. They had a lot of fire too. They must have been really cooking on stage.
You could feel those that show, like from where we were sitting at the other side of the arena. It was nuts. And that was the show they took, like, even to their outdoor festivals. I was super impressed. It was very good. Yep. That set needed to be like 3 hours long.
I would have been sure.
In happy territory. But yeah. I was quite thrilled.
Play the deep cuts.
Yeah, well, I would have been okay with that.
Yeah, I was happy with the set list that we got, though.
Yeah, no, me too. It was really good.
I was going to go to that show, but I got into town late, so instead I went and saw One Battle After Another in 70mm.
Because of course you did.
I have words to say about that movie in particular. Actually, I have words to say about that actual theater that you're talking about in particular as well.
Nice.
Well, why don't we get into talking about some movies and some words about theaters? Where do you guys want to start? Who wants to go first? What's happening here?
Let's talk about this because this is like super relevant right now. Is Cineplex wants to abandon the Park Theater. They just want to give it up entirely. The Rio is really interested in taking over the Park Theater. They want it really, really, really bad. But Cineplex
as a secondary screen?
Yeah. And Cineplex is so obtuse to having anybody else screening stuff in Canada that they want to gut the entire establishment on the way out, including junking that 70 millimeter projector. The Rio has gone as far as even offering to pay for the price of a brand new projector just so they could keep this projector. But evil corporation, evil corporation, evil corporation. So that's my piss off of the day that I read. Yeah.
So yeah. Fuck Cineplex.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Long live the Rio.
So scummy.
Pretty much.
So scummy. Just for what? For the act of being evil, of depriving what?
An audience of people. What I don't understand is they don't even play, like their programming is not even closely related in any way, shape, or form.
No.
Like it just makes no sense for them to do that.
No. No. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's really fucking sad. Happens. It's just the sad state of cinema and just showing that greed and fucking this rattle of capitalism is going to choke out the industry that we love.
I can only assume that the reason they want to move out of the park is because it's not generating the income that they needed to.
Yeah.
But every screening of One Battle is sold out pretty much.
Yeah, but that's one film.
You know, but it just shows that, you know, the 70 millimeter works.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, yeah, there's not a lot of movies being put out on 70.
Yeah. That's but one. At the same time, there's, you know, 80 years of film they could be showing, including Lawrence of Arabia and blah, 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 and all this stuff instead of just, you know, showing the 70 millimeter every time a Joker film is made or Tarantino. So it's, you know, their loss.
Oh man.
It's history repeating itself, right? I mean, like all of these battles were already fought in film before. You know, the idea of monopolies and breaking up these monopolies and the fact that there shouldn't be a monopoly of studios and there shouldn't be a monopoly of distributors and that was bad for film as an art form and it was bad for consumers and it was bad all the way. It was bad for filmmakers. It was bad for everyone. And it's like we forgot all those lessons that were hard won in the 30s and 40s and we're like repeating this again 100 years later. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. 110% agree.
Well, it's the same with like home video. Like people are saying that like Blu-ray is dead, but like Oppenheimer comes out in 4K and sold out and you can't get it for 3 months because they couldn't figure out how many copies to make.
Yeah,
because it just sold out right away. Like people want this stuff. Cineplex, book better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just book better.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sucks. It's a good theater.
Yeah, absolutely.
The screening of 70 millimeter was great.
Yeah.
So is the deal officially dead or?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. This is all I've read on it so far. So I don't have any. I'm sure we'll be updated in the next little bit because they'll generally probably move pretty quick on this shit. So. But speaking of that 70 millimeter screening, yes, I have seen One Battle after another, not in 70 millimeter, but in my local, Landmark Theater here in Penticton. And that movie reminds you why you go to movies. That is just such a perfectly paced, stunningly put together film. The climax of the film, like I felt like my stomach was on a roller coaster, like. It's PTA just has you in the palm of your hand throughout the entire film. Chase Infinity is such an interesting actress. I think she has a big future ahead of her. Teyana Taylor looks like a fucking special effect. Like she is incredible incredible looking. Leo is Leo. Like this I love this Bob character so much. And just I love the burnout aspect too. I really love the burnout aspect. And Benicio is tranquilo. He is so fucking cool in this movie. And there's so many just brilliant line deliveries. And that Sean Penn walk, I love that it's all over TikTok right now. It really makes me laugh. The lockjaw Vince McMahon, Conor McGregor walk, I think is really funny. And yeah, it's just like a really, really, really good film. And remember when Regina Hall was in like the Scary Movie movies?
Yeah, she's incredible in this one.
She's so good in this movie. She's
the best part of the Scary Movie movies, like, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. But yeah, this movie rocks. This movie is like cinema definer. Yeah. For like I think a decade gap for sure.
It sucks too because like we were just like heading into VIFF like a couple days later, and I'm like, well shit, this is the best film of the year.
Yeah, and I think it still sits with me as like the best film of the year.
Yeah, like it's just been nothing close. It's pretty much a perfect film.
Yeah.
And if anybody can tell me a better performance than Sean Penn this year, I'm waiting.
Yeah, he's the best sporting for sure.
Oh.
He's your best supporting,
which is terrible because like Benicio is also incredible.
Yeah,
and you know Leo will get nominated, Chase Infinity get supporting, you know, and PTA is going to win director, and this is going to win best picture,
editing for sure.
Yeah,
best edited film of the year.
There's a scene in a car that is like the coolest scene I've seen in a movie in a very long time.
Yeah,
it's just waves.
Yeah, it reminded me of like 70s thrillers. Like it had like I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before.
No, it's just like and the second viewing really nails it. So look forward to that, Steve.
Okay.
I saw it in digital, regular digital DCP, and I saw it in 70mm. And the 70mm made it look like it was filmed in the 70s.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was like, that's an addition.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah, it's the best film of the year. Bringing something else on that is better than this.
Yeah,
I'm looking at you, Marty Supreme. I'm looking at you, Avatar. Maybe not
Avatar. I'm looking at maybe Testament of Ann Lee.
Yeah, another
the big fast format. fast fold movie. Yeah. Yeah, that's in VistaVision. Like.
Yeah. There's a few things. There's that Neil Diamond movie. Come on.
Was it Song Sung Blue?
Yeah.
I already have access to it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that open on Christmas Day?
I think so. Something like that.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I have access to that one already. Maybe not a good thing.
Yeah. I don't think it's a great thing. Yeah. Okay. Well, then it's my festival, right? So, Deathstalker, I know you guys saw this one.
But
this movie is fun. Pure fun. The voice of Patton Oswalt in like the perfect spot you want him to be. One of my friends through podcasting, Paul the Mahler Lazenby, is one of the villains in this one. He has a great scene where he has to reattach his arm. It's really fun. It's fun stuff. And Bernhardt's having a hell of a time in this movie. It's just ridiculous, and it feels like a passion project for Kostanski to do. Like, he has a love for these old 80s films, because just look at everything that he's done since The Void. It's just he's embroiled in that era, so that one's fun. Nimesh's new film, Orphan. I mean, Son of Saul is like a VIFF definer for me. It crushed my soul that year. And then I had to finish the night off with Victoria. Do you guys remember Victoria?
Yes.
Was the one shot.
Yeah.
One shot.
Which totally wasn't a one shot movie.
No. That movie felt like it punished me. It was still really impressive.
Yeah.
After Son of Saul, that movie felt like it punished me. But I've always been very fascinated with Laszlo Nemes after it. Sunset is a great film, his follow-up, but I don't think it's close to Son of Saul. And Orphan's not close either, but Orphan is still a damn good film. Probably one of the best looking films I've seen this year. I love that 4:3 aspect ratio a lot. It's like a sucker punch for me. And this movie is like about the brutal and defiant like resilience of this kid who's just, I know, just everyone fails him around him. It's just such a brutal film. Really well done. Our hero Balthazar, which is Jaden Martell and Azza Butterfield in kind of like a teen activist dark thriller. Basically, Jaden Martell is a rich kid in New York who's trying to impress his crush. So he who's played by Anna Baryshnikov. So I was like, hell yeah. Because anytime she pops up in something, I'm like very into it because of Love Lies Bleeding. And Azza Butterfield is like a Texas kid who starts to troll him online when he's making these crying videos about gun control. And
whatever happened to him? Like, he was poised to be like the next big thing.
He had Sex Education for about 5 years.
Which just ended.
That's right. Yeah. I haven't seen that show, which is probably why he's out of my mind.
Gillian Anderson's so fucking great on that show. And that actually,
I'm going to watch that just any time.
Yeah. And one of the Doctor Who came from that show. The N'Gata, the guy that was most recently Doctor Who.
Nkuti N'Gawa. Probably butchering the pronunciation of his name because
I don't know how to pronounce his name either, but I know that's where he came from.
He's fantastic and he's brilliant in Sex Education.
But Azza Butterfield is unrecognizable in this film. He's got like this short blonde haircut. He's wearing glasses and he just kind of chameleon performance. Also Jennifer L is in this movie. I always enjoy her. It was a pretty solid film. These ones were like pre-screeners. Mile End Kicks. This one's going to come up later. Because I have such a deep, deep love for this film and just for how Chandler Levesque makes her films, because I had the same feeling for I Like Movies, where I feel like there are parts of the story that I like personally connect to on a cellular, like coming of age way. And Mile End Kicks is no different. And I love that she writes from experience and every film feels so personal. But always so charming. And I love the way she writes dialogue and stuff. The first screening for me of the festival was Christy. I did the pre-screening of that one and I enjoyed it. It feels like Sid's drowning a little bit when she's in scenes with Ben Foster, who is so fucking good in this movie. He is so coldly terrifying, especially when you're getting through to the ending and you're realizing some of his bullshit isn't exactly bullshit, like some of his idle threats. But I also kind of knew the Chrissy Martin story as well, because it's episode 2 of the Netflix Untold documentary series. So I enjoyed that one. And also it's got Katie O'Brien in it, and I adore Katie O'Brien. Again, going back to Love Lies Bleeding. The first regular screening of the festival for us was The Blue Trail, a Brazilian film, basically set in a Brazilian future where, once you hit a certain age, you are sent to the colony to be with all the other old people, which, you know, is something that's never revealed. The colony is never something that you get a contextual vision of. But basically, the main character is being hunted down by what they call the wrinkle catchers. So she goes on a expedition through the river to find basically a place to help her out, to get out of the situation. Rodrigo Santoro pops up in this one really quickly as a boat captain, and shows her to put some like hallucinogenic slime from a snail in her eye. It's pretty cool.
So is this basically like Logan's Run?
A little bit. This is the Brazilian slum version, right? Because it is still pretty, like, it's pretty baseline for, like, you know, the lower class, right? Like, everyone's living in huts and stuff. So, but, yeah, it was an interesting way to start the festival. And it got even more interesting because the second film, we headed over to the Rio for If I Had Legs, I Would Kick You, which Mary Bronstein just nails this really like close claustrophobic existential nightmare of motherhood that is executed with Rose Byrne's probably career making performance. She is fucking amazing in this movie. And Conan O'Brien as her exasperated therapist is really great as well. A$AP Rocky is really good in this film. Like, this movie just works on such a hypnotic, swirling, doom-ridden ride. And I really enjoyed the atmospheric feel of it. And I believe this is might be Bronstein's debut, her feature debut. But interesting stuff for sure. I was really into that one. And then we booked it over to the Granville Island stage for Late Shift. Basically day in the life on hospital floor that is severely understaffed. And Léonie Binèche just is a knockout every time. I adore her. One of my favorite international actresses currently, and the reason I wanted to check out Late Shift for sure was her performance. The next day we checked out Obex. Bill was there for that one.
Hell yeah, I was.
Yeah. It's a black and white, like very eraser head, but RPG fueled, like, story that's like also sweetly sentimental as well. Like, it has like this little twinkle to it.
First half is a lot different than the second half.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But there's a lot to love about Obex, a film that is just going to fade. No one's going to know about this one, really. But I think it was really fun. Blue Moon, the first of the two Richard Linklater films that I checked out at this festival. I thought I was going to lose Chloe big time on this movie. I thought I was like, uh-oh, like this is the one where she's going to be like, what the fuck are we watching? even without knowing anything about the subject characters, and I only know a little bit of stuff, I made a connection to one of the people that show up midway into the film. And I thought that was really good. And then I asked Chloe about it and she picked it up too. So I was proud. But this is about Lorenz Hart, who was the original writer with Rogers from Rogers and Hammerstein, and on the night of the Oklahoma premiere. And Ethan Hawke is just so magnetic in this film as like a clearly ego damaged washout, essentially, who is nothing but his stories right now. And then is also embarrassingly sycophantic whenever people of influence get near him. He becomes completely opposite to what he says he is. And he is so damn good in this movie. I love it when Ethan Hawke can really chew into a role, and this is exactly that type of movie. So I really dug it. And you got a blonde Margaret Qualley in this movie, which is... Margaret Qualley is just... She's so majestic to me. She's just a really great actress. The Things You Kill. Okay, I have a funny thing to say about this screening. Is the director of this film, which this is the Canadian entry to the Academy Awards for Best Foreign. The director, his name is Alireza Khatami. Curtis Wolschuk introduces him before the screening. It's the later screening at the International Village. And he comes up and he grabs the mic and he goes,
"I am on 1 gram of mushrooms."
And I was like, "Yeah, buddy. This is going to be good. I can't stay around for the Q&A, but this is going to be good."
If we had taken the mushrooms, would we have gotten the ending?
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I was actually going to do a poll. How many of us have seen this film?
Yeah.
Okay.
3 out of 4.
Yeah, I feel like I missed something. I really did. When I started to get to certain points, my brain was going, wait, what? I really feel like I missed a lot of shit in this
film. Yeah, I think that's intentional.
Okay.
It's
the mirror. Like, I get the mirror.
Yeah, but I get that part too, but it was like he missed a step.
Yeah, I really feel like he wasn't cluing us in on something. So it really kind of screwed with Chloe and I final perception of the film and our scoring of it. We just weren't quite there on it. The next day I saw the Falardeau film, Lovely Day, which is not the best Falardeau that he's done. I feel once you've seen It's Not Me, I Swear, it's like you're constantly trying to make that bar, which is like such a great French Canadian film. But it was fun. It was a fun little farce film. Young Mothers, I'll speak for her because she's not on the show right now. This is Chloe's number one film of the festival. She got Dardanzed, like big time. It hit her like a ton of bricks. This was the film to actually like. This is the film that invoked tears out of Chloe. Like, she really deeply connected to this story, just being a former young mother herself. I really like this one too. I really like all the Dardanz brothers' work. I feel like Viff is a big reason why I like Dardanz films. It was like them and Loach, I feel like, is the rawest human connection when it comes to the films that they make. So I really, really dug that. Nouvelle Vague, New Wave, this movie fucking rules. This is Linklater's other film that he played at the festival. To me, this movie plays like The Disaster Artist, where you're following one guy's vision. You have no idea because you think this guy's an asshole and has no fucking clue what he's doing.
I think he probably was an asshole.
Oh yeah, right. for sure. But like that's not true.
But then you watch Breathless and you're like, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, for the record, I still haven't seen. So I'm still on he's an asshole.
Yeah. But the construction of this film, the slight Wes Anderson nature that this film also has to it as well. I really loved it. I felt like it was very different from anything that Linklater's done. Like, you could take the director's name off that, I wouldn't have guessed it was his film. Really, really great movie. No Other Choice. With Neon doing the proper marketing, could be a Parasite level film. It's taking a very American idea, something that's not really like hugely prevalent in South Korea. And it's the fact of like mass layoffs and the fact that capitalism is collapsing and there's no room for anybody anymore. And, because I mean, South Korea is like you have a job essentially for life. Like the idea of pink slipping people is kind of crazy. That's why
this is movie... automation, though. I mean, that's the point is it's automation. This is going to hit every factory worker in the entire world, right?
Yeah, but the best thing for me of this is the absurdity, the cliff of absurdity this movie goes off of, for our main character to be like, well, the only thing that I can do is I can set up a fake company and get a whole bunch of people to send their resumes, figure out who my real competition is, and kill them. And it's just, it's so hilarious that it's just the, all, a lot of these decisions are made and just like, well, it's just what I got to do. And it just make, it's just so absurdly hilarious. I think Park Chan-wook has made such an interesting film to be dissected, and really, really love No Other Choice. And I hope that it makes a splash as like one of the big international films this year. Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie, my favorite comedy this year. And the bar is super high set by this one, because I was almost like falling out of my chair laughing at this movie. This movie is so sweet, so funny, so like, so Matt Johnson. I am also in love with Jay McCarroll. There's jokes in this that Chloe and I still bandy back and forth to each other in this movie. And I just had so much fun. The only thing that wasn't fun about watching this movie is sitting in the balcony at the Rio, which I don't think is graded properly. Like, they don't, it doesn't, it's not sloped at all. So like, I don't know, like the more you sit behind, the worse your viewing is. And if you're short, you're fucked.
So, meanwhile, the balcony at the Fifth Avenue
is great.
Beautiful.
I love it. I love it. And that's where we watched everything at the Fifth Ave.
Yeah.
And ironically, if you're short at the Rio, I mean, that's where the all ages, like, that's where they put the kids when they have like all ages screenings, because you're allowed to drink booze on the main floor, but you can't in the balcony.
Oh, boy.
It's an all ages screening. So, yeah. Yeah.
That's poor terrible. Kids. Yeah. No, that's terrible.
Yeah.
So, this is good for me to know so that I don't take the kids there.
Yeah. Don't do it.
Or just sit in the front row of the balcony. It's fine. That's fine.
Even then, it's still like, it feels like it's like right there. But anyway, Dance of the Living. I thought this was going, because the Spanish name for this movie is La Lucha. This is not luchador wrestling like I thought it was going to be. It's actually about Candirian wrestling, which is more of a like an intimate like test of strength, like definitely derived from like a Greco-Roman style. But it's an interesting film, like a well-told and like deeply emotional film, but it just felt like it was a little bit incomplete, like maybe a little bit half-baked, and just did not have a resolution that I thought was satisfying. The worst film of the festival, in my summation, was Luca Guadagnino's new film, After the Hunt, a film that has... that tries to present conversations that it has no interest in furthering, and lets its actors meander for over 2 hours. But Michael Stuhlbarg's doing it brilliantly.
Oh yeah, he's great.
He's so great. But it's just like all the characters are just assholes, and I don't like... I don't know. It just felt like it just didn't really, it wanted to say something, but it just didn't. And at the same time, it didn't want to say anything whatsoever.
I don't know. I kind of want to see Julia Roberts play an asshole.
I mean, yeah,
she doesn't do that very often. Like, I can't actually think of a movie where she plays a bitch. So I'm okay with watching Julia Roberts be a bitch.
It is kind of weird hearing Julia Roberts say, "See you next Tuesday." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
I fucking love Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Bring it on. I know you both hated it. I'm still going to see
terrible.
It.
It's terrible. It's awful.
It's Luca's. I'm so like, even the score is Ross and Reznor and Ross. And I hated it.
Yeah, it's their worst score ever. It's just a bunch of clock noises.
Oh, it's so bad. It's such a bad score. And jarring. Jarring. Okay.
They already have like a banging score this year, so.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Who cares? Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. I cared when I was sitting for two and a bit hours.
Yeah.
I was like.
Isn't this a Netflix title? Going on six.
Yeah. Isn't this a Netflix one?
No, it's
MGM. Playing theaters. It's playing Amazon theaters MGM. Right now.
Oh, it's at MGM. Okay, so it'll be on Amazon Prime. Yep. Got it. No problem.
Yeah. Saw a Slovakian movie called Father, which is about like every parent's nightmare, but like all one at the same time. Like, we see these stories and we're like, how could you fucking do that? And it's accidentally leaving your child in the car. In a hot day. It's called Forgotten Baby Syndrome.
Wow.
And yeah.
Wait, guy, this is actually a thing that has a name?
Yeah, apparently. That's why I learned through this film, because basically the main character, he doesn't usually drop his kid off at daycare, has to do it one day, and he sees himself entirely dropping the kid off. The kid jumps out of the seat and everything. Then, but it turns out that that never happened. He just went to work on like autopilot.
Is it good?
It's a pretty solid movie. I feel like it really did a dagger thing in the last moment that didn't sit well with me. Like I feel like the last moments of it were really took away from the overall feeling of the film. And I think it's the worst part of it, but I think it's a solidly done drama. It's just heartbreaking for sure. There was a Canadian remake or a reimagining of the Rob Lowe film Youngblood, a hockey film that we used to break up the heaviness that we'd been experiencing at the festivals so far. And it actually kind of really worked, because this is kind of like a traditional, almost formulaic feeling sports film that I feel like, again, like after the hunt raises subjects and then doesn't really want to talk about them. It raises, you know, like race and hockey, because our main character is a black kid, and other hotbed issues like hockey parents and that kind of stuff, hockey culture, all that stuff. But it just isn't interested in fully having that conversation. And it's kind of annoying in the fact that, then why the fuck did you bring it up if you don't want to say anything about it? It's the same issue that I have with After the Hunt for sure. Then we saw Clement Virgo's new film, Steal Away, which...
Trash.
I just...
Trash.
Like, the guy is just, like, at some point, like, he has made good stuff in his career before that I've enjoyed, but I also feel at the same time he really tries to push being provocative just to be provocative, and it really takes all the teeth out of anything that he's trying to say. And... I don't know. I don't know where you get on sexualizing a 14-year-old girl in this way. It kind of really bothered me. It really rubbed me the wrong way. And that another film that had a Q&A, because Clement Virgo was there. So Chloe and I just left our stuff in the front row, and we were like, fuck it, we're getting out of here and going to have dinner. So he got to look at our backpacks. Fucking laugh, but I don't know. I really felt nothing for this film.
Yeah, wasn't a fan.
Nope. The Secret Agent, Wagner Mora, being like the coolest motherfucker on screen that you're ever going to see, even in the face of imminent death, or like, I have no idea what this situation is. But this one's also done in such this pulpy Brazilian punk rock sort of way that, I mean, the gore that is in it, here and there is, it feels really like kind of 70s giallo in parts. And I think it's really kind of wild. I runtime a little bloated for me. I felt like it was a little, like it felt like it could have been tightened up a bit. But this is the same guy that did that Sonia Braga film, Aquarius, I think it was, which was a really good film. But I also had kind of had the same gripe that I just felt it was just like a little stretched.
Bacurau was the same thing, like yeah. Just a little bit overly long. Mm-hmm. I think his films all kind of suffer from that.
Yeah. Yeah. It just felt like a little
hard disagree on those two. I fucking loved Aquarius. That is still one of my Alzheimer's from VIF. And Bacurau is like brilliant.
Yeah.
Through Kino during the COVID restriction period. And I like gleefully laughing through that whole movie, because it was so out of left field. Like, I did not guess the twist in that movie at all.
The ending of Bacurau is like an all timer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. Awesome.
Not to say that they're not good.
No.
I just think
they're
both a little bit long.
No. I think I like Bacurau more than Aquarius for sure. And I liked Aquarius quite a bit.
And I'm the other way. I liked Aquarius more than I liked Bacurau.
I loved Aquarius. Sonia Braga Just give her all the fucking time in the world. I'll watch her for hours and hours.
My mom dislikes her to know it. I don't know why. It's like it's the funniest thing. She refuses to watch anything with Sonia Braga in it. She just does not like her, never has. From like back like the 80s. Like she's just not a fan.
That's funny. Udo Kier is also in Secret Agent, and I love Udo Kier so much. He just like screams genre film. Every time he's in it, like
I mean, this film is this. This was an interesting because this is very much about the military dictatorship in the 70s, and that kind of like surreality that can only happen in that level of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gorgeous. That movie's gorgeous. Really, like you know immediately as soon as you see the coloring that it's the 70s, like. It's really astonishingly beautiful. The shots in that film, and you feel the heat. You feel like you're there, in that
you
space.
You can smell the body under the cardboard.
I thought those parts of it were really brilliant. This was not as successful for me as like Aquarius or Baccarat, but I still thought it was like visually really stunning, and Wagner Moura was fantastic. So.
Mm-hmm. And I love Donna Sebastiana.
Yeah.
I adore her. Talking to a friend who said you should probably rewatch this once you have the ability to, because probably watching it at 9:30 in the middle of a film festival probably wasn't the best thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was my fourth film of the day.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it got out at like 12:15, 12:30.
Yeah.
Yep. And it was punishing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. Then the next day I had a couple films that were a break from VIFF because I went to the press screening for Tron Ares, and yes, I know this movie has been shit on since it came out. I'm not gonna shit on it. It is the dumbest Tron movie made, and we're not gonna sit here and pretend Tron is a smart franchise, but this is for sure dumb. And there's a lot of dumb shit in this one, but it's got Greta Lee, and I fucking love Greta Lee. It looks gorgeous. The soundtrack just humps its way through the whole 2-hour runtime. It just feels good. And it's just dumb shit, and I'm totally okay to watch it. And Joaquin Ronning is no Kaczynski. We know this, though. This is not even Kon-Tiki Joaquin anymore. This is Safe Studio guy Joaquin Ronning. So it was okay. I was okay with it. I really dug The Smashing Machine quite a bit. That was the other film that we broke the day up with. I enjoyed The Rock's performance in it. Emily Blunt is great as usual. But these outside performances from real MMA guys like Ryan Bader playing Mark Coleman in this film and Boz Rutten playing himself in the movie, I thought were really, really great and textured performances in a film that's really kind of driven on these type of things. And I think Safdie handles the subject material really well. I think the Smashing Machine is a great film, but all everyone will ever say about it is it made $5 million in its first weekend. Yeah. And that's sad. It's sad when all the conversation is about money, because, I mean, now the conversation about one battle after another is how it's going to lose $100 million. And, like, that's not why I go to see films.
But weirdly, it just keeps on making money, and it's not going to lose that much money.
Yeah.
Yeah, like nobody thinks about that. Like it's going to be playing till February.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Then back to VIFF that day with A Private Life, which is the new film from Rebecca Zlotowski. It is Jodie Foster's French language film debut in a film that just like for being kind of billed on being a slight mystery thriller, really isn't. It just kind of feels like a psychiatrist trying to scramble back culpability or the fact that she might not be at fault for a patient's suicide. Daniel Auteuil is the best part of this film for me. He is so fun and so playful and almost like he's like in a separate film as well. And I love Jodie Foster. I just was not feeling this film whatsoever. And then the night ended with another long one, Agnieszka Holland's Franz, a film that I really didn't expect a lot from, but snuck up on me as probably my surprise film of the festival. I think this film is so gorgeous in its execution, and Holland's like the perfect person to make a Kafka-esque biopic. Like it really works. The modern satire that they're playing with made me laugh like hard, like out loud in the theater. I thought it was just really, really, really funny. And this movie's crazy because Franz Kafka was just a fucking like weirdo. Like there's no other person like him, clearly. And to think of what psychiatrists would make of him in a modern time, it would be interesting. So I really dug that one. They added another screening for the John Candy documentary I Like Me, which is a solid doc about a guy that nobody has a bad thing to say about, and everyone is still deeply mourning him. Anybody that ever met him has a deep sentiment of like he was gone way, way, way too soon. And taught me a little bit of things that I forgot about it, like the CFL ownership. I forgot that he owned the Argos with Wayne Gretzky and fucking criminal Bruce McNall. I totally forgot about that. So, and to get reminded of all the great performances that John Candy did in his entire career. It's really, really good. There's not going to be enough good things said about Sentimental Value. Joachim Trier is a serious serious gift as a creator to his audience. I don't know if there's many other directors that are on his exact level of filmmaking and storytelling, and just the way to wring emotions out of scenes so beautifully. But this wall that's between Stellan Skarsgård and I always butcher her name, Renata Rensvi, is so beautifully done, and that the culmination of that final scene is so beautiful. Really stuck with me.
Also has my favorite scene of the year.
Birthday present.
Yeah.
Yes. 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 The coolest grandpa presents ever.
Yeah.
Because if you're getting some Gaspar Noe and some Haneke, then you're rocking it for sure. Yeah. Grandpa knows what he's doing.
Them young.
Beautiful, beautiful stuff. So I really, really like that. Then my last two films of the festival was Panahi's It Was Just an Accident, which is probably as far as like a wider scope, you might be able to draw in a bigger audience with this film. It feels like the more accessible and straightforward narrative film that he's made, but still at the same time, he's using this for the same punch that he usually gives, and you feel it, and it's resonant. And his stories of trauma and the prism of feelings that come off it are always so, so interesting. And I think this movie shows that one so well, and it's also visually so fucking well done. And I adore the ending. The ending is so fucking cool. Like, big, big fan.
The ending, I had to sit in the dark for a while before I could get up from the seat, on the last shot. It just viscerally hit me so hard. And I couldn't get up right away. But I love that film. I thought it was such an incredible series of questions around, like, how do you cope with this? Like, how do you go back after suffering brutal assaults and treatment in prison. And then you go back, you're released, and you're released into the same community as the people who have done this to you. Mm-hmm. And you could run into them at any point. Like, how do you ever feel safe again, knowing mm-hmm. that you can run into the person that traumatized you mm-hmm. at any point? And that kind of, you know, there's like the big sort of argument in the film, like, no, we've got to kill him. We've got to like get rid of this person and so that he could never do this to another person. And then, you know, but then what does that make us? Does that make us mm-hmm. just as bad as the oppressor? Like all of that I thought was so brilliantly handled in this film. And then, yeah, like I said, like that last scene, just like straight through the heart for me. Mm-hmm. It was, really hard for me to stand up afterwards.
Well, and it's funny because I was thinking about it afterwards and kind of mulling it over, and it feels like everybody in that van is like a different archetype as well. And that he has so many different views that are constantly making these arguments for and against what they're doing.
He said apparently at New York Film Festival, they did like an interview with him, and he actually talked about how everybody in the van were people that he knew. Like they were based on people he knew from his own experience in prison.
That's
great. And yeah, so it's like yeah, this is not just a film. This is him, I guess, part of his own therapy and coming to terms with the things that he's experienced in Iran. And that just just floors you even more, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you just say this is not a film? I see what you did there. I see what you did there.
And then I finished off with Kelly Reichardt's The Mastermind. This movie, thanks to its simmering score, like it's got this jazz. It's like a ham and eggs film. Like it's just like constantly simmering on the stove. And it feels so genre for Reichardt. Like this is her heist film. And it was so fascinating to watch because at no point does it not feel like a Reichardt film, but it moves in different ways. And Josh O'Connor is that actor. Fuck, we let him get away with anything. He's not a good guy in this film whatsoever, but I'm so interested in everything that he's fucking doing. And it feels a little side shoot from the Reichardt stuff that she usually does, like even like down to the cast. And I know Kristen Stewart was supposed to do this movie and scheduling fell out and we got Alana Haim instead. But it just it added to making this film feel very, very different than anything Reichardt's done. And I had a lot of fun with this movie.
Except that it's still like set in this like esoteric art mm-hmm. environment, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, who's Everything ever heard muted. Of this abstract artist? But I'm sure he's a real artist. And I'm sure that those are real paintings in a real museum. Because, I mean, all of that.
It's the one that she actually works at. It's so, that Reichardt actually works at. She taught there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, that's what makes it very Reichardt for me.
But, yeah,
and then John Maguro showing up.
So. Yes, and I there's a lot of really great long shot work when it comes to the end, when it comes to the runaway time, and even the despair that this movie leaves you with too, just like the wrong place, wrong time, is so great. I really dug what she was doing with this film. And that's how I ended my festival. But good thing, basically everything I've seen since I've gotten home, I've really enjoyed. I finally got to see Spinal Tap 2, The End Continues. And yeah, it's cute. It's fun and it's cute. And it's good to see the crew back and with Rob Reiner and everything. And it's short and it's sweet and it knows when to end. And it was good enough. Roofman. If you didn't tell me this was a Cien France movie, I had no idea, because this is the most accessible Cien France movie he's ever made. And really driven on a great performance by Channing Tatum, maybe one of his best performance. Like, the guy just, I say this a lot because I said that Blink Twice was his best performance, but he just keeps growing as an actor, and I really appreciate him in this film. I don't like, my heart doesn't like seeing Kirsten Dunst cry, and she does multiple times in this movie of like an ugly cry that makes me feel bad. But and Peter Dinklage is great. Emery Cohen, I didn't want to punch him like Bill did in Rebel Ridge. But
he does have a punchable face. Come does on.
Have a punchable face or a pokeable belly in this yeah. one. But yeah, I dug Roofman quite a bit. Good Fortune. I really, really love this movie. It's a sweetheart of a film. It's like somebody took Wings of Desire and threw like a little bit of Bill and Ted naivete at it and mashed it with Trading Places. Keanu is a lovable person in reality, but it is irresistible to not feel for Gabriel. He is just such a puppy dog of a person, and I adore him. And I just really, really love this movie. Maybe a little more Kiki was needed because Kiki makes every line great. But I really, really dug that one. One of my favorite comedies of this year for sure. And Black Phone 2, a very solid follow-up to the first film. I kind of dig the Krugerizing they're going with this one, and it shifts the story off of Mason Thames' shoulders a bit and puts it on Madeline McGraw, who I think is very strong in this film. And visually, Scott Derrickson really nails this movie, the feel of this one. And it kind of brings me to like a sinister type of feeling, and I dig that. And Ethan Hawke having fun again. And fun enough, Scott Derrickson's oldest son, Atticus, scores this film. Thought that was interesting.
Nice.
And then, I don't know if I'm breaking embargo on this. I saw the new, the remake of The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, which is, it's got Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and then the nanny is Makeha Monroe. It's okay. It's not terrible. It's got some solid gore at the end of the movie. And then I find out that it's directed by, I got to look up her name. It's the one that did Hey Sarah, the Bone Woman. Michelle she directed. Garza. Yeah, she directed this movie. So I was kind of surprised by that. So it's like solid. Hmm. Yeah, that's it. I'm at the end. It took an hour, but I'm here.
The trailer looks terrible. I'm so disappointed they remade that movie because the original is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca De Mornay cameo?
Yeah. Nope.
Missed opportunity.
No, missed opportunity.
Annabelle Ciara. Yeah. Nothing.
Missing. I got some movies. No VIF movies in my list. So let me rattle off my movies. As Bill alluded to, I finally saw Weapons.
There you go.
Didn't love it.
Oh.
Listen, it was fine. The kids are creepy. There's some really great scenes. Some of it really confused me. That finale is fucking awesome. Kids breaking through like all the shit. It's just like the craziest thing ever. It was fine. I don't know. I'm very confused by, like, it just feels like a very straightforward horror movie. And I'm very confused by some of the imagery, which doesn't really seem to allude. Like, it feels like it's alluding to something, but it doesn't, like, deliver on it. And I'm like, did I miss something? Like, the whole thing with the machine gun floating over the house, I still don't get that. I'm like, that feels like it should be important for some reason. And I'm like, I don't get it. Am I just stupid or have I missed something? Like, I don't know. So some of it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But overall, it was fine. I don't know what else to say. It's not my favorite thing of the year. I don't know, dude. I'm sorry, Bill.
Shaking my head at you.
I know you are. No, nobody else can see it, but I know you are.
I don't get it.
The Woman in Cabin 10 is pretty terrible. I was a little bit shocked because I didn't realize this book has been on my to be read list for, I don't know, a couple of years probably. And I didn't realize it took place on a boat. Like, I actually thought the cabin was like a cabin in the woods. So that was the first shocker. And it's just, it's a very, I'm sure the book reads well. It's a very silly, very, very silly thriller in quotation marks because it's not very thrilling. Keira Knightley is fabulous, not in this movie. And Guy Pearce is Guy Pearce being awesome, also not in this movie. It's That's just, it's very glossy, very forgettable. The yacht is amazing, and it's the best part of the entire movie. And Dan and I, of course, then went down this rabbit hole trying to figure out, does this boat actually exist? And it does. So, yeah, that was the excitement of that movie. My Father, the BTK Killer, is terrible.
Did you watch some good things, please?
Oh, I did. This is not one of them. So the only reason I wanted to bring this up is because this documentary feels so misguided. I don't understand. Like, I don't know why this woman, Carrie Lawson, would do this to herself. So she is one of the children of the BTK killer for years. Like, the family has never really talked about it for obvious reasons. And like, at some point she decided to, you know, talk about it, and she wrote a book and it was a bestseller. And now she's made this documentary that doesn't really, it doesn't offer any interesting insight. Like, it just, it feels like a really sad and pathetic attempt at attention for something your dad did that is absolutely horrifying and terrible. So I don't know. It really pissed me off. Like, a lot. I was angry watching it. I should have probably turned it off, but I was very, very, very angry at the end of this movie. Just skip it. It's horrible. Maintenance Required is so sweet. And Katie O'Brien is amazing. And she wears the best outfits in this movie. And she has more than three words to say, which is a nice bonus. I wish she was the main star, but she's not. But it's fine, because it's totally fine. It is what it is. Like, it's super silly. It's this romance about these people that are like, they know each other from a car bulletin board because they're both building these classic cars. Turns out that she owns a shop that's run by women that used to be her dad's. And he works for one of these franchises that opens a location literally across the street. Things happen, and then they figure out they already know each other. Romance dies, romance comes back alive. Listen, I've told you the entire movie. It's fine. I don't know. I love it.
I don't even know what this shit is.
It's not for you, dude. And you should watch it, because maybe your heart, your solid ice heart will melt a little, but it's not really for you.
No.
I did enjoy it. I thought it was fine.
Bill saving it up for regretting you.
Like Melissa on Planes, I will go on Planes and watch.
There you go.
Romantic comedies, I guess.
It Ends With Us and all that.
Like,
shit.
This one is not a romantic comedy, and neither is It Ends With Us. Just saying. And It Ends With Us is pretty terrible. This is actually like fun and nice to watch. Doesn't leave you feeling icky at the end. It's sweet. I enjoyed it. And then we watched Grand Prix. So the story with Grand Prix is, we were going to stream something the other night, and we turned the TV on. And Dan's like, oh, we should watch the opening of this movie. It's really good. I'm like, okay, not knowing what it was. And it's fucking amazing. I'm like, what is this movie? We now have to watch the whole thing, not realizing it's 3 hours long. But holy shit, James Garner was really good looking in the 60s. Like, really, really, really good looking in the 60s. Yeah, I'm totally enamored by this movie. It's fucking amazing. And if you haven't seen it, it's like stupendous. Like, how they captured these racing sequences is amazing. So of course it's directed by Frankenheimer. It's like top notch. It's dramatic with a capital D. I said to Dan afterwards, I'm like, this movie is pretty like, it's pushing at some buttons. Like the lead romantic attachment is the mistress. Like, she's pretty much the only woman you see in the entire movie. And she's literally the mistress. Everybody knows that he's married to somebody else. She knows he's married to somebody else. And they're cavorting around town to all the Grand Prix locations. It's great. I loved this movie a lot. It was fantastic. And now I need it on 4K with all the extras because I need to see how they made this thing. It's fantastic.
You kind of forgot something.
What?
Toshirô Mifune's in it.
Well, of course. Well, so is Eva Marie Saint, who's gloriously gorgeous.
Yeah, Yves Montand's in it too.
Eve Montand is like salivate.
Yeah.
Like she's so good looking.
Toshirô Mifune.
This entire movie is if beautiful people driving around in beautiful cars. Like they've intercut real racing footage. Like I was shocked. I said to Dan, like you could put this beside like Ford versus Ferrari and it stands up. It's a movie that's like 50 years old almost. It's like amazing. It's amazing. Cannot recommend it highly enough. And then last night we watched The Perfect Neighbor, which is Gita Grandathir's documentary, which won, I think, a cinematography documentary prize at Sundance. This thing is amazing. So it's the entire documentary, it's about the murder of Ajika Owens, who is this woman that lives in this neighborhood that feels like something out of the Brady Bunch. Like, it's crazy. Like, it feels totally out of time. There's kids running around, entire families just, like, hanging out. Like, you never see this in cities. Like, it's shocking. I'm like, this is the kind of thing where, like, you want your kids to grow up here because all the kids are out playing at all hours of the day. This woman moves in across the street. She starts basically calling the cops on the regular because she's complaining that, you know, she can't enjoy her quiet comfort of her home because there's kids in her yard. Turns out it's not her yard. This entire thing plays out with body cam footage from the police officers that was the footage was acquired through a Freedom of Information request by AJ's parents for the trial. And I guess Ajika Owens' mother is an activist. And through machinations, they met Gita, who basically was given all of this footage. And as she was watching it, trying to figure out how the story was going to unfold, she's like, this is the story. The story is in this footage. And so the entire film, for like 90 minutes, you're watching essentially police body cam footage of that's like brilliantly edited of the events that led to the final event. It's heartbreaking. It's also in places like really heartwarming. Like you see like the police officers talking to the families that live in the neighborhood, talking to kids. You get like the sense that this is like a real community with people that really care about each other, just the way that they're talking. And it's really heartbreaking. It's fantastic documentary. The Netflix documentaries are hit and miss. This one is really, really good. I highly recommend it. It's one of the best things I've seen this year. It's excellent. So, The Perfect Neighbor. 2 thumbs up for me. And that is all I've seen.
Nice.
Yeah. So who's next?
Do you want to go?
Don't all jump at once, guys.
I know. Yeah.
Melissa.
Let me see if you left. So,
Melissa, give us some stuff.
Okay. Well, first off, I saw 24 films at VIFF, and I think that in the interest of time, I'm not going to run through all 24 of them. I'm just going to give some overview highlights. I'm going to start with the Canadian, the feature film debut of a brilliant local filmmaker named Sophie Rambari, Blue Heron. This movie really touched me. It's a movie that's a lot about memory and about family and about families coping with someone with pretty severe mental illness. I read an interview with her where she was talking about having read a lot of Cassavetes on Cassavetes while she was making this film. And I think that kind of comes through the compassion that she has for the characters and all that. I also feel like there's a bit of Varda influence in here as well, because we see the character, she comes back as an adult and meets herself as a child. And I felt that was kind of Varda-esque for me. But I thought this was brilliant. And I think if Canadian movies ever actually made it into the Criterion Collection, which most of them do not, I feel like this would actually be a contender for that. And I think Rumvari has a really solid career in front of her. Like, this is a pretty astonishing first feature. It's going to be really interesting to see where she goes from there. It's great on a narrative film basis. Also, as an art house film, I think is extremely successful. And I really hope more people see this. I think it was a banger at the festival. I'm sure that they will bring it back, because she's local. There's a lot of folks that know her. So hopefully lots more people see this movie. What else? Left-Handed Girl was absolutely delightful. Lots of shades of the Florida Project for me. You can tell that the filmmaker works a lot with Sean Baker, and this feels very much like a Sean Baker film, but it's also entirely in Taiwanese and set in Taiwan. And the cultural context of it is that's her background, and that comes across. One of the other cutest kids ever to be in a movie. And there's a meerkat, you guys. There's a meerkat. Like, it's kind of all I need. Cute kid, meerkat. Done. You've won me over. So Steve also already mentioned No Other Choice. I think this is brilliant. I mean, Lee Byung-hun gives a performance for the ages, as a guy who's essentially been driven insane by being downsized and decides that the best way to compete for the limited non-automated jobs that are left in his field is by murdering his major competition.
Which makes total sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's really funny. It's a very black comedy. It's very Parasite. I think a lot of people are going to go for this movie. Nirvana, the band, the movie, the show, the movie. Again, Matt Johnson, for me, can never do any wrong. And this movie was hilarious. And also, surprisingly, like, the comedy was actually really smart in this movie. Like, for something that you kind of think is going to be bro-ish and dumb, it's actually really smart comedy. There's a lot of jokes that punch up. When they travel back in time to 2008, like, all of the advertisements are for guys that have all been taken down through sexual assault allegations. So it's like Cosby, Gian Gomeshi, like all these people. That was a beautiful touch for me. And then he's written like so many callback jokes. Like, there's so many things that pay off at the end that it's so brilliantly woven. And I still like will never understand how this man gets away with like not having a million cease and desist orders. There's copyright infringement probably up the wazoo with this film, but he has the greatest lawyer, like absolutely the greatest lawyer. Sentimental Value, again, absolutely brilliant. Any film that for me that's about the father-daughter dynamic, and especially not always super healthy father-daughter dynamics, is always going to hook me in. And this one's brilliantly done, brilliantly acted. I also want to say the Zacharias Koenig film, Wrong Husband, I loved this movie. I love how Koenig makes these movies for his own community. He makes them for the Inuit community. And it's a way to document their culture and their stories. And the fact that he then allows the rest of us to witness them is such a beautiful gift. Honestly, I just find it so fascinating just watching any aspect of life in the North. I'm just like there's a scene where they're spearfishing, like ice spearfishing, which is like, it's just cool to see like how that's done. Or skinning a seal and like all of these things that are just like basic cultural practices up there, but they're not things that we get to see very often. So that's really cool. And this film has a troll in it that is like, it's one of the greatest troll costumes I think I've ever seen. And apparently it's 150 pounds And there was a former circus performer who was inside of it. And the reason the costume was 150 pounds was because he was in the water. And so in order for him to not freeze to death, essentially, they had to like create this huge, massive insulated suit that weighed 150 pounds. And it's like, the troll is great. It's the best troll I've ever seen in a movie. I also really loved Lucretia Martel's documentary, Nuestra Tierra, or in English, Landmarks. This is about an indigenous community in Argentina where they had land defenders out on their land, and a developer essentially shot one of their community leaders. This was all captured on film. There was a giant trial. They were convicted, but of course never spent any time in jail. The only sort of poetic justice that ever occurred was that one of the men involved in this died of COVID. So hooray for COVID, I guess. But the film was really interesting to me because I think sometimes we forget about the incredible legal uphill battle that indigenous communities have to fight in order to fight for their rights because of sort of terra nullius and this idea that the lands were unoccupied or unused when Europeans got here. And our entire legal system is based on things like title. Like title didn't exist before. So if your people have lived on a land for tens of thousands of years, you don't actually have title to the land that has been your traditional territory for years and years and years. So how do you prove that in court? How do you prove that your people exist when some, you know, prominent historian in your country has claimed that your people are extinct? And the state has done this huge assimilation drive of trying to eliminate your culture and your names and your languages. You know, like, so just these things of having to prove your connection to your land and having to prove that your own people even still exist when you know that you exist in your bones, I thought that was really eye-opening, and I hope a lot more people see this film because I think it's a really interesting framing on the fight for indigenous rights and land rights and justice. And it's also gorgeous. Like, it's filmed really well. There's a lot of really interesting aerial drone shots of Argentina that are quite stunning. I also want to mention Modern Horror, which is Andrea Wehrhahn's documentary. First of all, she is stunningly, stunningly gorgeous. Like, I'm in love with her. She's brilliant. She's intelligent. She's gorgeous. And this movie makes a really strong case for dignity and respect for sex workers, which should not be a hard argument, but definitely is. There's so much societal bias that she really unpacks very well and in a very entertaining way in this film. So I'm glad this one is going to Crave because I think it will find a wider audience there, which is fantastic, and she deserves it. And then one of the most fun films that I had at the festival was Pillion. Alexander Skarsgård has never been hotter than he is in this movie, number one. Number two, Harry Melling is phenomenal. And there's a really interesting... There's a point in the movie where they're having dinner with Harry Melling's parents, who are like the PFLAG poster parents. Like, they're so supportive of their gay son, but then they get a little concerned for him when he gets involved in a DS relationship. And Alexander Skarsgård kind of turns to the mother and is like, what, like, you think this is bad for your son, but you think this because it makes you uncomfortable. And just because it makes you uncomfortable doesn't mean that it's bad for your son. And I thought that was like such a good framing of like the DS space and BDSM in general, like that it's not about the people outside the relationship. It's about the people inside the relationship and what they're getting from it and the fact that they're both consenting adults involved in it. So yeah, so I think that was a really interesting movie, and it's way funnier than you might have thought. And I love that A24 is marketing it as a dom-com.
That's good.
Yeah. So yeah, there's lots of really great stuff. And Skarsgård has been on the interview front. Apparently him and Melling didn't meet until like they literally met and then got put in their buttless wrestling outfits and had to like grapple each other. Like that was like their first scene together. So that's pretty amazing. And they have really terrific chemistry in this movie. It's really fantastic. You should go see it. Just probably not with your mom.
Oh, my mom might be okay with it.
Yeah, your mom might be okay
with
it.
Don't judge. Don't assume. I'm kidding.
I did, even though Steve mentioned this already, I did want to come back to Nouvelle Vague because I rewatched Breathless today because after I saw it, I like really wanted to rewatch Breathless. And Linkletter just, I feel like he really captured the spirit and the heart of Breathless in Nouvelle Vague. I think if you're a big fan of Godard or you're a big fan of Breathless, you're really gonna love Nouvelle Vague. But I also feel like you can watch that movie and enjoy it even if you haven't seen Breathless, and it's just gonna make you want to watch Breathless. So yeah.
Truth.
That's what Chloe felt about it.
Yeah.
Breathless rules.
It does.
I love
it
that does. Movie.
It's so charming. It's just so charming that it's got such great energy. It's like jazz on screen, really. Yep.
Yeah, he knew for about a 10-year period, Jean-Luc Godard was a genius.
Yeah, I still like Weekend is also like an all-timer for me. I love Weekend so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, the thing with Breathless, and it's the same with Nouvelle Vague. Like I thought, like Belmondo in Breathless is like he's perfection. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a loser, but you still fall in love with him. And like, I thought that what is his name? The actor in this, Aubry Dulin, who plays Belmondo, was just like pitch perfect. He was the perfect Belmondo. I didn't think anybody could do Belmondo, but he's perfect.
Is that it?
That can be it. Yeah.
I've already done my VIF stuff, so I'm just gonna do the regular movies I watched. The Lost Bus, the new Paul Greengrass film, is completely unwatchable because Paul Greengrass can't shoot a fucking film anymore.
No, it's not unwatchable. It's pretty terrible, but the ending is not bad. The last 10 minutes are pretty decent.
Other than you find out that Matthew McConaughey can drive a bus through fire for 3 minutes.
I don't know. I thought the editing of that last 10 minutes was pretty decent.
Really bad. I did not like that one at all. Yeah,
we disagree.
And it gave me a headache. It's just shaky cam, shaky cam, shaky cam. Matthew McConaughey being bitchy. Yeah, just didn't like it. The new Lilith Fair documentary, Building a Mystery, is quite good. And I still have a really big crush on Liz Fair. She's still really great. And
does she make you feel like a supernova?
No. Yeah. Well. Yeah. The unfortunate part of her career, but Exile in Guyville is quite possibly one of the great albums of the 90s.
I agree 150%.
But yeah, it's I had no idea they gave a bunch of money to charity at every show. I thought that was incredible. And they raised a lot of money. Like those shows were really popular. And yeah, just a great collective of shows and great artists who were not getting any kind of recognition. And then it's weird how people kind of went against it because they got popular. I hate that. I think that's really shitty.
I love that whole festival was like basically a fuck you to the guy that told her that you can't put two women on a bill because no one will buy tickets.
Yeah. And it's also really cool that they brought Sinead O'Connor on because Sinead's awesome and she got railroaded in something she didn't really probably shouldn't have. And it's also really strange that like people like Christina Aguilera played it. I was just like, oh, I had no idea.
And Missy Elliott. I did not know that either.
Yeah, Missy Elliott rules.
My my wife actually saw Sarah McLachlan on Friday in Kelowna.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah, she played Victoria last week.
Yeah.
It was the opening of the tour.
She took video of it. And
Sarah sounds awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Building a mystery. And I was like, holy fuck.
She can really sing.
Yeah. The first, I guess, debut film from Ronan Day-Lewis, Anomaly, with a returning Daniel Day-Lewis, is not very good, but man, is he still really great.
No, for yeah. sure.
Yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis is really good, but the movie is kind of not.
Him and Sean Bean?
Yeah, and they're both really good, and it's fun when they're yelling at each other, but the movie is just not very good. This might have been one of the more disappointing films of the year. I thought this was going to be great, but no, it's not. I say skip it. And the underrated Samantha Morton's in it, and she's incredible. And I wish
Morvern she worked more. Caller is yeah. like just like one of the greatest movies.
I wasn't as high on The Smashing Machine as Steve was, but I still liked it. I thought Dwayne's really good. I just did not like Emily Blunt at all.
No.
Yeah, she's just there to argue the whole entire film. Yeah,
and she's not a good person to have around if you're like, you know, if you're like dealing with addiction.
Yeah.
You know, like, fuck you, man. Yeah, like, you're kind of a dick.
Like, Dwayne Johnson's character is like the nicest person in the world and constantly trying to be nice, and she's just mean
yeah.
the entire film, and it kind of brings it down a little bit. But yeah, you were right about Ryan Bader and Boz Rutten and Alexander Usyk, who's like the
yes.
world heavyweight boxing champion.
Yeah.
They're all really great, and it's shot really well, especially the in-ring stuff is really quite good.
Feels textured. It feels like you're really like at the because this is the other thing about that is like I was watching Pride and I was watching yeah. that kind of shit, so it does feel textured in that kind of way. That was very interesting.
Side note, I saw this during the festival at a 1 p.m. show at Scotiabank downtown. I was the only person there, and it was great.
Oh.
There was no lineups. There was no tickets. There was no, am I going to get a seat? It was just, I sat down and watched a movie. It was yeah. great.
We, me and Jen watched Good Fortune in a theater by herself on the Thursday.
I kind of like it. It's kind of yeah, fun.
Yeah, it's so great.
House of Dynamite is super disappointing. I kind of expecting this to be great. The new Catherine Bigelow film. Half of Hollywood's in this film. Just doesn't have, it has no ending. The ending sucks. And it just ruins it. It's on Netflix next week. You're all going to be able to see it. Tell me what you think next episode. I super disappointing. I expected so much from this. And another film I saw during VIFF, and it kind of ruined my day, actually. I was kind of bummed. I'm sorry, Steve. Tron Ares is terrible.
You don't like Jesus at the end?
I do respect that, you know, Ares likes Depeche Mode, but like, I'm not kidding. There's a plot device in this film where Ares talks multiple times about his love for Depeche Mode.
Depeche Mode, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Is there any Depeche Mode in that soundtrack?
No, it's all Nine Inch Nails. No, but I don't have the vinyl yet. Mine hasn't arrived, so.
Well, no, yeah, it's Chloe, not on the soundtrack.
Chloe. Oh, but it's on
Just
the...
Just Can't Get Enough is played,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it's in the... Yeah.
He's doing a okay. chase away to it, and he plays it.
Yeah, it's just the dialogue is so corny and overwritten at times, and...
So is this the movie that kills What's-His-Face as the lead in any sort of franchise?
Jared yeah. Leto? Yeah, no, yeah. that should have happened already, though. He's been yeah, terrible for years.
I think so.
Okay, yeah, but they still keep giving him franchises. So is this the one where they say, no more franchises for you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that it hasn't made $100 million worldwide yet in its second week probably did that, not Jared yeah. Leto. Yeah, it's really bad. Sorry, Steve. I did, but yeah, the Nine Inch Nails score over the film is rad.
Yeah.
Best part of the film.
Yeah.
People are talking about how, you know, Jared Leto plays a great robot. Like, okay.
Sure. I never thought that.
No, but like, come on, like okay. be better. I also will say that Good Fortune is really good. I really like enjoyed
that delusional.
I'm happy that you know, Aziz has come back, you know, after getting outed for not being able to fuck very well, because that's why he got canceled, which is kind of weird. But
weird.
This is something I did not know.
That's not why he got canceled.
Okay,
that wasn't it.
Okay.
But okay, but yeah, but like I had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was said some good stuff. Yeah. Like the idea that Keanu's character like hits rock bottom within like 2 hours kind of made me laugh.
So fucking funny. The cigarette bit, and he's like, "You're smoking." He's like, "Don't take it away from me. It's all I have."
Yeah, I quite enjoyed like, that.
So great. The human experience hitting him so fucking hard, and also kind of like what they're saying about like gig culture and just how the wage disparity, all that kind of stuff. Like, it's
That was really good.
Yeah,
Roofman's good. Channing Tatum's really good. Kiki's really good. Kind of surprising, actually. But yeah, you are right. This, I wouldn't have known this was a Derek C. and Franz film.
No.
I had no idea. And I honestly didn't know this was a Derek C. and Franz film until the end credit came up. I had no idea.
Yeah. Maybe in the filter of like how it looks, it's a C. and Franz film. Like, and maybe comparable to Place Beyond the Pines, but...
Yeah. The only thing I would say about it is like more Lakeith. I love Lakeith.
Yeah, I love Lakeith. Oh, yeah. And Juno Temple's got some really great stuff in this movie.
She's funny.
She's got some really good stuff.
And the last thing I watched was the 5+ hour Martin Scorsese documentary, Mr. Scorsese. It's really good. Nice. Not a lot of stuff I didn't know already. And I just find it really incredible how many people have worked in these movies and they all want to talk about him. In this documentary, including Daniel Day-Lewis, who talks a lot in this documentary.
That's
also
awesome.
Helps that his wife directed it, but you know, that kind of helps. But Daniel Day-Lewis seems like a really normal guy when he's not acting like Bill the Butcher. And he's got this long flowing hair and he looks really good. And I'm like, wow, you seem like a normal guy. It's like, really strange.
I might have said this before, but Gangs is like one of my favorite Scorsese films.
Yeah,
quite. And it's because of Daniel Day-Lewis's performance in the movie.
Casino All the Way. Sorry, you're all wrong.
But yeah, it's super watchable.
It's in my Letterboxd top 4. Casino All the fucking Way.
I had no idea.
To the death.
And the best thing
about Goodfellas is in my top 4.
Yeah. The best thing about the documentary is Marty is like sharp as a tack.
Yeah.
Do you not follow him on his no, I think it's like, his granddaughter on Instagram.
No, it's his daughter.
It is the greatest Instagram feed of all time. I love it.
Yeah, I really like her.
I just think it's hilarious.
Well, sad because she has to take care of her, like they have to take care of her mom, right? Her mom's bad. So yeah, it's good that Marty's still like
Emmy nominated Martin Scorsese, by the way.
Yes. So.
He hosted a bunch of the Q&As for New York Film Festival. Yeah. There was some great footage on their Instagram feed.
Just because he's like that, man.
Mm-hmm. He's a movie god.
Yeah. It's good. I definitely recommend that. But that's it for me.
Nice.
Okay. So we are like almost 2 hours into this thing.
Shit.
So I recommend, well, actually, this is Melissa's recommendation. Perhaps we split the top 5 out to a second show, or we just rattle them off with no context.
We've already kind of talked. You guys have already talked about the movies.
Yeah.
We've just talked about the movies. I think we can rattle them.
Okay.
Sure. Let's go.
Go for it. Who's going first?
Five. I'll go first. 5-1.
Yep.
So I'm just going to just give my whole list right here. Right?
Give me your whole list, dude.
Okay. My number 5, Joaquin Trier's Sentimental Value.
Wait, how is this so low?
Because there was films that just nailed me. Number 4, Park Chan-wook's No Other Choice. Number 3 is Chandler Levesque's Mile End Kicks. My number 2 is Nouvelle Vague from Richard Linklater. And then Matt Johnson's Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie is my number 1 film of VIFF this year. The most visceral reaction out of me was this film because I was just fucking laughing my head off. This movie is so hysterical.
Nice.
Who wants to go next? Okay, listen, I'll go next. You guys goaded me into doing a top 5, even though I only wanted to do a top 3. So my top five out of the 14 movies I watched, which is why I didn't want to do a top five, but Deathstalker is number five. Christie is number four. Megadoc is number three. Modern Horror is number two. And Blue Heron was my top film that I saw at the festival.
Megadoc was not a VIF film.
Yes, it was.
No, it was not.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, well, then I did four, guys. There you go. Four movies.
Okay. Mine are completely interchangeable because I feel like all five of these movies were phenomenal and I enjoyed all of them and in very different ways. So I'm just going to say them all not ranked.
Love it.
Blue Heron, Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie, No Other Choice, Pillion, Sentimental Value, with honorable mentions for Left-Handed Girl, It Was Just an Accident, Wrong Husband, and Mile End Kicks.
Because Melissa did honorable mentions.
Because I knew you were going to do a top 10. So don't blame it on me, Bill.
Okay. I'll say I'm really quick. How about that? Number 10, it's a tie. Modern Horror and Blue Heron. Number 9, Cover Up. Number 8, Nouvelle Vague. Number 7, Cold 75. Number 6, Decorado. Number 5, Train Dreams. Number 4, Tuner. Number 3, No Other Choice. Number 2, Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie. And number 1, Sentimental Value.
I want to note that Bill has an animated film in his top 10.
Yes.
I want to note that that was a brilliant radio voice.
Thank you. That was so good. That was really good. Yeah.
I practiced.
He's coming for your job, Steve. He's coming for your job.
I know. I felt the quake there.
Okay, other than I have really bad anxiety and can't do it all the time.
Okay. So Bill, any chance that you know what's coming?
I do. I'll do this quick. I didn't write a lot. I just wrote all the big stuff, and we see most of it anyway. October 24th, Justin Lin has a new movie called Last Days. It's not there. A Fast and Furious movie.
I'm there.
I have not even heard of that movie. Yeah, yeah. But I love Justin Lin.
Yeah.
What's the storyline? Is this like a drama?
It looks like a regular...
Oh, I'm so there. I'm so there.
It's like a regular film without... people going to the moon in cars. I've been seeing this commercial a lot, and the writer of the book's name is in front of it. Regretting You. What the fuck is this?
This is the Colleen Hoover.
Oh, is this the new Colleen Hoover?
Yeah.
Who's Colleen Hoover? Maybe I'm just.
Have you not walked into an Indigo like in the last 10 years?
No.
Yeah, she's a big writer.
Okay.
Huge.
People really like her.
Not to say she's good. Let's be honest. She's everywhere.
Okay.
She's Suzanne Collinsing right now. This is another movie with Mason Thames is in this movie as well.
Nice.
He's been he's been busy in 2025.
A friend of mine saw Shelby Oaks 2 years ago, then they reshot it.
Oh, completely?
Pretty much.
There's suddenly a lot of good things about this.
Neon gave them more of a budget and they reshot it. So a friend of mine saw this 2 years ago and said it's pretty cool. So I don't know what it is now.
And it's got British Columbia's Camille Sullivan in it.
Hell yeah.
I'm there just for that.
Yeah.
They had me at Sullivan. She's fantastic. I love
her. Yeah. They gave her the lead and we're like, yeah. As soon as I saw her in the trailer, I'm like, you fucking serious?
Yeah.
So in. Shorzy's
Camille Sullivan.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Springsteen.
Yeah, I got my tickets. Actually, my wife and my mother-in-law are coming with me to that one.
Yeah, not my favorite. Nebraska's a good album.
No, come on. You love biopics, though, Bill. Come on.
Oh, yeah, he's such a fan. He's lining up.
Hey, I didn't shit on Christy, okay? Leave me alone.
Oh. I didn't
hear should we give you a prize?
Wait, I shit on it last episode. So.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
You shit it on in a text message to me right away.
Yeah, pretty much.
What are you talking about? I didn't shit on it.
Begonia Opens Limited, the new... what the fuck's his name? I forget.
Yorgos.
I still have VIF brain, by the way. Can you tell? It opens the next week. It opens wide. Hedda, the new Nia DaCosta film, which played Tiff and got pretty good reviews. Tessa Thompson. Looks pretty good. Period piece.
And then it sets you up for Nia's next film. coming out in January.
The Bone Temple, is that what it's called? That's right. Something like that. Right. Yeah.
The Jimmies. That's all I know. The Jimmies. It's gonna be the Jimmies movie.
House of Dynamite hits Netflix. It sucks. Sorry, it sucks. October 31st, something that's playing theatrical right now, Ballad of a Small Player, the new Edward Berger film, which I've heard is not very good.
I heard it's not very good either, and it's him and Colin Farrell. So
yeah,
it's like,
I still want to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I'll decide if it sucks.
Yeah, totally. the Rowdy Jude film Dracula opens. It's really weird, and I didn't really like it. But
yeah, I was gauging my interest in watching it because the runtime was a little punishing, especially mid festival. Yeah. To be like, okay, well, let's go 3 hours of something that was helped by AI.
Yeah, pretty much. And then hey, Hedda's on Prime Video the next week. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Fresh off its big time shout out to Nirvana, the band, the movie, the film. Back to the Future gets re-released.
the line of like, if you're screening this right now, I think this is the only time you're ever going to see this. I don't know how we're doing this.
So good. And Nouvelle Vague opens. And then it's on Netflix 2 weeks later.
Oh, so,
So people will get to see that.
And Blue Moon's actually opened this Friday in Canada through Mongrel.
So that's pretty much it. Is it Begonia?
For me, it is.
Fucking hope so. I don't know.
Oh, well, can we? I mean, Frankenstein opens this week, I think.
Yeah, but Steve and I won't be able to see it until.
I'm going to throw my top hat in for Mortal Kombat 2.
Didn't that get delayed till next year?
Did it?
Yeah, it's delayed till next year.
Oh,
I would have watched that.
I just ruined Steve's year.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like,
that sounds like an airplane movie.
By next weekend, I'm going to see Carl Urban play Johnny Cage. This is going to be cool.
No, delayed.
Sorry.
Why? That doesn't even make sense. It looks like it was done. Like, why?
I don't know. The new Predator looks pretty badass.
Oh my God. That new trailer.
That's the week after.
Yeah, that trailer looks badass.
I was showing my son-in-law the trailer and his jaw hit the floor. Like,
Dan's like, they're making an animated Predator movie? I'm like, no, dude, it's live action.
It's live action.
And his jaw was like, what? He looked very confused.
Oh my God. The big.
Like, I thought they were only doing animated Predator things now. I'm like, no,
live action. No. They're doing both cool things. All the cool things.
All the cool things.
Don't worry, Backpack L. Fanning. You're in Sentimental Valley.
Look up the billboard. Look at the Dan Trachtenberg shared the billboard, and it's two billboards, and they're connected by a piece that's the Predator jumping through the air with L. Fanning on his back.
I don't want to like him, okay? Stop trying to make me like him.
Dan Trachtenberg?
Yes.
Why? Why? Does he suck?
I don't know. I just
Maria's gonna hate on for him. She's
something about him just rubs me the wrong way. Oh. But damn it,
I guess he's never coming on this show.
He can come on the show. I just won't kiss his ass. Open offer. You can come on the show to talk about the cool stuff you make. I just won't kiss your ass about all the shit you've made too.
Yeah, on After the Credits, we don't kiss Dan Trachtenberg's ass.
Oh my God, that should be that is the title of the episode.
Yeah, that's the tagline.
Wow.
All right.
This is so specific.
Very specific. Gotta listen like the entire 2 hours to get it.
Yes.
All right. So where can folks find you between now and the next time that we record?
I am Bill Harris. I'm on Letterboxd at SoundJam69, and I'm on Blue Sky at That Bill Sky. Bill Harris. Have a good 2 weeks.
And I am Melissa McDowell, and you can find me on Letterboxd as @Melzy. And you can see my complete list of all 24 films I watched at VIFF and read all the reviews if you really want to. They're all there.
Love it. And you can also find me on Letterboxd @TheMarina. That is pretty much the only thing I'm updating regularly. So there you go. And last, but definitely not least.
You can find me, Steve Stebbing, on my website, stevestebbing.ca. I do a show on there every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time called What the Hell Should I Watch with my daughter, Chloe. We've been on a hiatus because of VIFF, but we're back on October 24th with a brand new episode.
Yeah, skipping 2 weeks is bullshit.
I guess it's the season premiere or something like that. I'll take a little time off. I'm also on Tremble the Horror podcast with Kurt and Taylor. I am on Shane Hewitt in the Night Shift every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Toronto's News Talk 1010, found on the iHeart Radio Network. And you can also get that in podcast form as well. And I don't have the show name because I can't remember it at this point, but I am on now in Kelowna and Okanagan wide on AM 1150. I'm on Fridays now, just after the 8:30 news break. You'll hear this guy's voice. And yeah, that's all the spots right now.
Steve's taking over the world.
Steve's middle name is Ebert.
I'm trying. I'm trying. You know, the media, like, especially in like critic media, has just disappeared so much. Especially in Canada, like, I think like Eli Glasner is still like, I think the guy when it comes to Canadian reviewers, but he's like Toronto centric as well. So I don't know. It's weird times. So I'm just trying to make sure I get my name out there. So eventually when there is money involved in this, I might get some.
Nice.
Nice.
You can find links to all the things we talked about today, including our very quick top five lists at atcpod.ca. And we will be back with another show in a couple of weeks. So until then.
Hack the planet.
Hack the planet.
Bye.